The Tom Woods Show, episode 2176.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. If you've ever wondered how younger kids can learn authentic American history, we finally have the answer. The Tuttle Twins children's book series now has an American history volume. Check it out at tomwoods.com/history. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. All right, yesterday I said we're going to have our friend Germinal Van on today. I'm going to have him on tomorrow. I mixed things up a little bit. I forgot that I actually had scheduled a man I know only as Texas Slim ahead of Germinal. And this is a guy who has been working for a long, long time in agriculture and ranching. And he knows a lot about what the problems with the food supply are and what we need to be doing about it. And I got to know him through following his Twitter feed and after I was alerted to his work by our friend Adam Curry, the former MTV VJ and now podcaster who's been a guest a number of times on the Tom Woods Show. And I thought, well, this Texas Slim has something to say. So welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, Tom? Appreciate you having me on in such short notice.
Well, I'm the one who gave you the short notice because I found out about you. And I said, yeah, why have I not talked to this guy? I'll tell you, I was happy. When I went to contact you, I thought, okay, he already follows me on Twitter. That's half the battle to getting him on. But I found out about you because I guess our mutual friend Adam Curry sent me a message saying, I like what this guy is doing. I think he would make for a good guest on your show. And Adam Curry hasn't failed me yet. And then I took a look at what you do and you know, there aren't a whole lot of issues out there that are more important than food right about now. So I thought it would be an opportune moment to do that. I assume you are located in Texas. Can I assume that?
You bet. Always and forever, for the most part.
Okay. How about we start with, I didn't really give much background about you at the beginning. How about you introduce yourselves to the folks?
Yeah, it's just Texas Slim. It is a valid name. I've been called that all my life. Most of the time, Texas was added to it whenever I was traveling. It was easy because everybody loves Texas, right? And so it all kind of just correlated into that name, Texas Slim. But I grew up in small town Texas, you know, dirt roads, everything. I grew up with agriculture and ranching all around me. Seventh generational Texan. Grandfathers all were in the agricultural ranching space, producers, stewards of their communities, all the way from the ground up. And so I learned a lot growing up. I learned, you know, everything about farming and ranching for the most part. Always been a proud cowboy, always kind of, you know, lived that type of tough and grit type of lifestyle. In the 80s, whenever I was growing up, though, we had Farm Aid and, you know, basically destroyed a lot of farmland ownership in the state of Texas across the United States, really. Well, my grandfather, that land went bye-bye too. And so, you know, I've seen a lot of cycles about what happens with agriculture, ranching, food, and, you know, types of global shifts. And so a couple of years ago, I basically had an opportunity. I had an internal injury and I got busted up pretty hard and I had to kind of heal up, but I started looking at food. And I started the health of this nation. And whenever I left younger, I became a research analyst throughout the years. I was in big tech. I taught myself. I never went to university, but I was pretty damn good at what I did. So a couple of years ago, I decided to go ahead and put my skill sets together and go a deep dive down into the global food industry and see where it is, why we've come where we've come to a point where our health is basically bankrupt as a nation. That's not me saying that. That's basically the CDC saying that. They're saying, you know, people that actually keep track of this stuff. Well, what has happened in the last 50 years is that our food has been manipulated in ways that people just don't understand.
Well, and wait, so before you get into that, what I want to know is because you have so much experience, it allows me to ask you something like, yeah. I mean, farmers and ranchers always have some, I mean, any line of work, you have some challenges you have to face. But how has the nature of those challenges changed as you've observed it over the decades? I mean, for example, a few, I don't know how many episodes ago it was, but I had Dr. Peter McCullough on. And of course, he's a pretty controversial guy. But I said to him, if I had asked you, wrong with American healthcare 3 years ago, and if I were to ask you today what's wrong with American healthcare, I bet your answers would be quite different. So likewise, how would you answer this question, let's say 30 years ago compared to today?
Well, I'd say 30 years ago, basically, we didn't have the three major food consolidation on the global corporate scale that we've had in the last 30 years. By saying that is that we've created basically an apparatus of food distribution, food production, and food supply that is dependent on different nations and different corporations to basically feed ourselves in our communities, be it city or a small town. Used to, even 30 years ago, you could buy food that was a lot closer, it was produced a lot closer to where you lived. Today, any community across the United States, that food's coming from thousands of miles away. And by those consolidations happening within the industrial food complex, it's basically centralized a distribution model that has jeopardized and actually kind of fundamentally changed the quality of our food as far as nutrition and actually being able to raise local food for local communities to where they can have access to better nutrition. Right now, the nutritional starvation that we're seeing right now in our children and our adults are the basically, you can point it back to this food consolidation model that is going on. The last major consolidation that happened was in 2017 and 2018. By that, they had marching orders, government contracts were signed. This is how we're going to change this. This One World Food Group was one of their strong points is that they're going to basically say, basically, that animal protein is not needed anymore in our consumption models, which is a flat out lie, but they're using climate change to basically, for the idealistic person, make them believe that you do not need animal protein, that you're saving the planet if you don't eat a cow that's been harvested. And by doing that, we've changed our understanding of what food is, where it comes from, and it's basically part of a medical, agricultural, pharmaceutical complex that is pulling off some nefarious things across the world right now. And people look about what happened the last 2 years. Well, during that time, they're moving forward with this global industrial food shift. And you look at the Netherlands, you look at Sri Lanka, you look like South America, things are happening with food supplies and it's coming. And people don't realize that it is coming. And a lot of people don't understand maybe the scale that it's going to hit our communities. And nobody can say how bad it's going to be, but I know there's going to be a shift.
I've been following also in Canada, apparently they're doing the same thing with regard to fertilizers and stuff like that. So would you describe what we're about to face as a purely man-made problem? Like we could avoid this if it weren't for people making psychotic decisions?
Oh, 100%. I mean, right there, these psychotic decisions, I don't think is what was intended in the beginning. But if you look at the history of mankind, the number one way you control mankind is you control the seed. And so the seed throughout our generations and our lifetimes has changed hands many times to more of a centralized control apparatus. Well, when that happens, you know, you get something that basically it becomes a power move. It's a form of being able to control a society as far as nutrition and as far as food in general. And the way I put it like this, and it's tough for people to understand that it's not a judgment, but we're overfed and we're going through a nutritional starvation that a lot of people don't understand. We're not as healthy as we used to be. And that's one thing is based on our consumption model that has been engineered in a nefarious way. They've gone so far from abundance, true abundance that was based on proof of work. And now we look at our food supply, it's abundance based on fabrication and overly processed reliance on chemical companies that have taken over our agricultural space in ways that people don't understand.
Can you elaborate on the term nutritional starvation?
Well, I have many doctors that basically work with us in the Beef Initiative, and what they're seeing all the way from children to adults is that, you know, these are people that, you know, neurologists, heart surgeons, functional medicine doctors, what they're seeing overwhelmingly is people's brains and bodies are inflamed in a way they've never seen before. And they can all be tied back to one thing. It's their food consumption. And what they're doing is they're looking at food in the wrong way. Families are looking at food the wrong way. Individuals are looking at food the wrong way. We're conditioning our kids to basically think that only food is good is that it tastes good and it's got a cartoon figure on it. By saying that, what we do to our bodies now with the same consumption of the same food that we thought was 10 years ago is actually having a detrimental effect. And people don't understand that true nutrition comes from the soil, the minerals from the soil. And we're taking the soil and the animal out of our consumption models, and that is creating a nutritional starvation to our minds, to our young boys. They're not developing testosterone anymore. The hormone levels are changing in our children. 46% of our children ages of 5 to 11 are now obese or overweight. 46% of our children in the United States are overweight or obese. That is not acceptable. And everybody that's sitting back and watching this happen and thinking that's not based on poor nutrition, then they don't understand food. And a lot of the parents really don't. Even if they're trying, you're reading a label that is basically a deception. You know, the apparatuses that control our consumption models, our market access, are basically holding back market access to the true nutrition that we should be consuming at this time.
All right, let's talk about what it is that you're recommending people do. What are you recommending that consumers do, and what are you recommending for farmers and ranchers?
Well, one thing that's happened in my lifetime, and you've seen this too, is that, you know, the farmer rancher used to be a pillar of the community. You know, you actually knew who they were. And in the digital space in which we live in right now, their voice has been drowned out. They don't have a voice as well as they should and as loud as they should as people that actually live and die to raise food that is pure and that it's clean and that it's something that you can trust. And so you look at how the ranchers, there's a prohibition against the rancher and the farmer's voice and them being able to supply to a consumer that is 100% ready to create a consumer demand in a different direction. So what we're doing in the Beef Initiative, we're that bridge. We're about building relationships between the consumer and the rancher that doesn't have a voice, but now he does. And so we're inviting the producers to come into the Beef Initiative platform, inviting them to establish a relationship with me, Texas Slim, and the Beef Initiative. We want to know what they do, why they do it, and then we want to tell the consumers, here you go. You've been looking for this. It's not ButcherBox. It's not Whole Foods through Amazon. This is actually a true relationship that you can trust and that you now have market access, that you can actually trade with that person peer-to-peer, and nobody can tell you no. Because this farmer and rancher producer is basically right in your backyard and you didn't even know it. So we're bridging gaps, we're building relationships, we're establishing communities again, we're making people kind of look over their shoulder and see how their grandparents probably lived. And we're saying, hey, this is a new international lifestyle and it's based on value for value exchange that you are in control of, not some USDA, not some FDA, and we're following the law just as good as the law follows itself. And this is actually a lifestyle that you can empower yourself and your family, and you're going to meet some damn good people, and you're going to build some relationships that you can rely on for a lifetime. As everybody else is out there having all this food insecurity, nobody that's in the Beef Initiative is worried about that because they know who they're dealing with. They have confidence. Their trust is there. They've been verified, and they can actually start creating a whole new consumer demand that the rancher needs right now. People do not understand how much the rancher has been attacked.
Is this kind of along the same model as community-supported agriculture?
Yeah, it is. It's the same model. You know, one thing about it, there's a lot of these programs out there that many people don't even know that exist. You know, right now I'm up in the Texas Panhandle, and I'm working with my local producer up in the Texas Panhandle. He's building out basically a community agricultural system based on food sheds. And he works with a group of people called the Ogallala Commons. And if you look closely at your community and your surrounding areas, they're everywhere. And so we're trying to bring that awareness, that education, that awakening, saying, hey, you don't have to go too far to kind of be part of these programs that already exist. we're going to help trump them up and basically let people know that they do exist, that they're actually a better choice, and then they need your support, and they're based on community and relationship building, like I said before.
So is there a website we can go to?
You bet. It's thebeefinitiative.com. It's that simple.
The Beef Initiative, with the word
no,
the
just,
in it?
I'm
the?
Sorry. Just beefinitiative.com.
Okay, beefinitiative.com. All right, obviously I'll put that on our show notes page is tomwoods.com/2176. So I'll put that there. Okay, so the benefit of this nutritionally, I think, is clear enough. The benefit of this may be economically, might also be, I assume this is also of some benefit to the rancher because you build up a network of local people who will be reliably consuming your product. And then for me, it's if, I mean, but what is the ultimate benefit of this? Is it that in the long run, or maybe even the medium run, when things, as you're predicting, things might get bad in terms of food supply, I'm already plugged into something?
Yeah, well, that's part of it. And I get asked all the time from the very beginning, what is the benefit of this? We're going to save children's lives. That's what we're going to do. You get a child that's 5 years old that's already diabetic, he's done. He or she is done in that life. What is he going to, they're going to be on insulin for the rest of their lives? So if you want to know the why of the Beef Initiative, it's because we're saving children's lives. And anything else beyond that is building community with those children, with those parents that have an awareness that, hey, maybe their consumption model the last 20 years has gotten all of us in a place that we don't need to be in. We're vulnerable. Our food supply is fragile. I don't know how bad it is in Philadelphia. I don't know how good it is in Texas, but I know that there's things out there that need improvement because our health as a nation is basically being affected in a ways that a lot of people don't want to take accountability for. So if you look at it as overhaul, there's tons of benefits that comes from basically changing your consumer demand and actually looking at your consumption model and saying, wow, I don't need all these prescriptions. I don't need all these medications. I don't need to be dependent on that grocery store if that gets a run on that grocery store. I already actually have a relationship with somebody. I already actually have a freezer full of beef, which is the best form of protein in the world. And so you look at all the benefits, it's a no-brainer, everything that you can gain out of this. It's an international lifestyle a lot of people don't understand that they're going to start adopting. We're going through a global industrial food shift, and I say it every day. People don't really know what that means. Well, it means from the ground up, our food is about to change in ways that people aren't prepared for. Whenever you have this nitrogen war that's going on, well, what does that mean? Well, they're not growing crops. If they're not growing crops, what does that mean for the agriculture? Well, they're not eating grains. If they're a commodity cow, they're not getting grains. Well, who gets those cows? Well, JBS, Cargill, National, and Tyson. Here in the state of Texas, we're in a drought. Where's all those cows going that people can't take to market and get processed? Well, JBS and Tyson and Cargill, they're taking that inventory and they're selling it. And they're not selling it to the American consumer. They're shipping our beef overseas. And then people in countries like Brazil are shipping 200 million tons of beef into the United States. And we don't know where that cow came from. We don't know what that cow ate, but it still has USDA on it. So if you want to look at all the benefits, it's because it's called food intelligence. It's a form of food intelligence that we as a nation need to wake up to. I mean, I've been around the world several times and, you know, how many times have I said, oh, America, oh, fat Americans, you guys eat like shit. You know, this is what they tell me. So you look at everything on a global scale and what we're known for, what we produce, what we do not get to consume as far as quality food, you start seeing a bigger picture that basically if you're aware of that type of food intelligence, you're going to actually save your health, your children's health, and hopefully your community because you're part of a stronger community that is needing to be rebuilt kind of like our grandparents did.
Before I go on, let me say a quick thing that will help a lot of you and you know who you are. If you are in business and you're getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO, our great sponsor. If you're a small local business, you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. If you're tired of cold calling, use your website as a lead generation engine. If you're not showing up for your services on the search engines, then get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Well, let's get into the practical side of this. So suppose I go to your website and I suppose I'm able to use it to track down if there's anybody in my area who's producing beef along these lines. Okay, so then what is the kind of arrangement I reach with that person? Is it that do I commit to buying meat from him for a year, or like what kind of arrangement do we have?
Well, that's between the producer and you, and that's the beautiful thing about it. This is, like I said, this is relationship building. This is not a website telling you. There's two steps of basically the beef initiative as far as coming in as a producer and a consumer. You can go right now and you can go to beefinitiative.com, go to the beef box site, and you can get a beef box sent to you anywhere in the United States. And we've been doing that ever since January. And our sales are really starting to pick up. The volume is picking up. We have distribution. We have the processing center. We don't have to ask permission from anybody. Best beef in the United States right now is going through those beef boxes. You know exactly who your rancher is. That's Cole Bolton of K&C Cattle down south of Austin. So if that's the choice you want to make, you can order up your beef boxes. Okay, well, next week we're going to be doing a subscription model. If you want something delivered to you once a month, you get to have it. And you get to sign up and you know for a fact that you're going to have beef for the next 12 months. Okay, let's say, well, I'm in Washington State and I basically don't want beef shipped from Texas. It's nothing against Texas. That's a long distance. I don't want to pay the shipping. Well, I'm going to go there and see if I've got a local rancher in there. A lot of people are finding their local ranchers. They didn't even know it. What they're doing is they're going to their website because the rancher gets to put their website in the beef initiative. It's open source. It's crowdfunded. It's crowdsourced. And so those ranchers are putting their names into the Beef Initiative platform because they're getting found locally. Now, what we're doing is they're creating a consumer demand more close to home than they thought they could do in the past without the Beef Initiative.
I remember back when I was growing up in the 80s, it was the conventional wisdom that it was unhealthy for you to eat red meat. This was an unwise indulgence, but we being silly human beings, we can't resist it, and so we eat it anyway. And now, increasingly, as with so many other things that they told us with such a high degree of confidence, it turns out it's just the opposite. I mean, it reminds me of when I was a kid, I used to not eat butter on my pancakes. I thought the butter was bad for me. The butter is better than the pancakes. I didn't know that at the time. So there is a little bit of a shift, at least maybe not among the so-called expert class, but the general public, I think, has started to get the message that actually the alleged evidence that eating red meat is bad for you is more or less non-existent. Like, go ahead and show it to me and have it really, really show there's a connection, not a correlation. Show me there's a connection. You basically can't find it. So that itself has been a very important step forward in this, that people realize, okay, maybe I should eat meat after all.
Yeah. You look back with the cholesterol lie, the cholesterol deception, you know, that was Ansel Keys basically creating this type of propaganda around meat way back when Eisenhower, our president, our warrior in the 50s, 1954, had a heart attack. Well, they started looking at cholesterol and they were saying that, well, our president had a heart attack because, you know, he eats too much red meat. Well, they didn't bring up the fact that he smoked 4 packs of cigarettes a day. And so you look at the cholesterol lie and how it's basically been used in the medical field and in the agricultural field and ranching and everywhere across the point from medical, pharmaceutical to agricultural complexes, that basically it's been one big deception. You cannot say that we did not get here by eating animal protein. Nobody was having heart attacks before the 1920s, 1930s, 1950s. What we did is we increased our consumption of chemicals and basically processed food in a way that we'd never done before. So if you understand history and you understand our consumption models based on pure animal protein, it was a lie. And then that fed into the fat-free lie, which has been horribly orchestrated, but people still believe it today, that fat, animal fat is bad for you. It's quite the opposite. It's the most healthy thing you can do.
Let's suppose you're going through the grocery store and you're feeling in a particularly proselytizing mood. You come across somebody in the meat area, the beef area, and you want to explain that the beef that they're buying there in the store is inferior to what you can give them. How would you make that case?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll go straight into that. And this is really great that you answered it today, because I talk to ranchers every day, right? And, you know, I listen to them. I listen to what they're saying. They're giving me like really good feedback, what's really going on in the ranching world right now. And if you look at, you know, I talked about inventories and how they've been basically kind of depleted, and, you know, that something's going on here that a lot of people don't realize. So here's an email that I put together from two ranchers, and they're ranchers I talked to, and this is what they wanted me to say. Remind consumers the majority of ground beef they are getting right now is a mixture of 20 different killer cows at the grocery store, meaning 1 pound of meat has 20 different cows in that 1 pound of meat. Tons of commodity meat is now hitting the markets, and we're still importing over 2 billion pounds of beef every year. Mostly of that cattle is coming from South America, south of the border, and Australia. We're not even consuming American beef anymore. We're consuming beef that is controlled by 4 of the major processors, 3 of them that have major headquarters in Brazil. So you want to look at some corruption and some deception, look at JBS and see how much they've been fined the last 5 years, hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars. But guess what? They've made almost $1 billion. And if you look at what's going on with our consumption of our animal protein at the supermarkets, we've lost control of that market access to the beef that we should be eating. And we're getting fed beef that we don't even know how many cows are within that beef. And this is going to get worse. What happened in COVID, our inventory lines were depleted in a way, but we didn't see it because we relied on the future. You know, we live in a debt economy. Well, we're indebted with a food supply now that hasn't recouped from COVID. So whenever all this meat gets sold out, the commodity side of it, the commodity cow gets bought up and sold in the United States and overseas, we're going to have a shortage. And basically what they'll be able to do, and this is the attack on animal protein, is they're going to turn beef into caviar, and then they're going to supplement the beef to the common man with all this fake meat and these fake commodities that they're designing with this global industrial food shift.
Have you followed at all Thomas Massie's Prime Act going through Congress?
Yeah, I saw him do that interview with John Stossel yesterday. And
is that something that you think would be helpful?
Yeah, of course. But once again, the bureaucrats got us here. You know, I'm not, you know, there's some good, very good politicians that are really trying really hard. But guess what? You don't have to ask permission from a politician to go shake a rancher's hand. Okay, that's where that starts. Yeah, we need to leverage within these acts and these bills. But if you look at it right now, the DOJ should be all over JBS, and they're not. Why aren't they? Well, it's because our politicians aren't forcing the hand of the DOJ as it should. The type of manipulation and price gouging and manipulation that they're doing against the American rancher is criminal, but they're not allowed to talk about it because, you know, they can't get enough momentum. Whenever they do these bills in Washington and even on the state level, they're not helping that local rancher out. They're helping the commodity rancher out. So we got to help everybody. We got to help the guys that are still doing the feed yard, you know, the bigger ranchers that are going through that are trying to feed the American family and they're trying to produce the best beef they can. Well, we'll also got to do it for the smaller rancher farmer that really is the people that you should be talking to. So it needs to be done on a bigger scale. I think it's great for awareness. I think it's getting people talking, but there's a hell of a lot more that needs to be done, and that's done by the American consumer. That's it. It starts with the individual. Nobody's going to save us here.
Looks like you have an event coming up in the middle of September. You want to say something about that?
You bet. It's called the Beef Initiative Food Intelligence Summit. And we're having it in Bluffton, Georgia at White Oak Pastures. I hope a lot of people of you know Will Harris. He's on his ancestral land. It's 150 years old. He was, you know, his grandfathers were, of course, regenerative because that's what you did back in the day before chemicals. And then they went into the commodity. He became a commodity cowboy, just like a lot of people did after World War II because of nitrogen, fertilizers, and pesticides and herbicides. Well, Will did a reverse and he went back to doing it like his ancestors did. So White Oak Pastures is a perfect study and a perfect case study for people to look at. And so Will and I have been talking, we planned this back in November. So we're going to have a 3-day conference at White Oak Pastures in Bluffton, Georgia. We're only going to sell 100 tickets, but what those people, those first 100 tickets, what they get to do, they get to go to White Oak Pastures. They get to have farm and ranch tours. They get panels of education basically on Bitcoin, on the heritage woman, on homeschooling, on food intelligence, regenerative farming and ranching, how to get going. There's all kinds of little workshops that we have at these conferences. It's 3-day. Everybody leaves these conferences feeling like they just had something that they can actually change their lifestyle, they can change their market access, and they can change their consumption models from audio, video, to their food. And so this will be our third one this year. And Adam Curry is actually going to be a headline speaker there as well. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, he's going to be there. And, you know, we're talking about value for value exchange here. You know,
that's his thing.
It is. Value for value exchange is a new international lifestyle. And I think people are starting to get ahead of that. They're starting to understand it because, you know, they're looking for some answers. And, you know, we've been doing this for a while. I've been on the ground for 3 years now doing this. So it's taken me 3 years to get to where we are having these type of conferences. You know, and it is. It's an international lifestyle. It's something that is educational, but it's also something that you yearn to do. It betters your family. It betters your consumption. It betters your brain. There's so many strong points in all the feedback that I'm getting from these other conferences. It's nothing but positive. And I think we're on to something.
Well, I'm actually now, I've got the website up and I'm looking through all the different possible boxes, but I am also interested in finding out who's near me. And as you say, people who've been sitting right here all this time, I didn't even know they were there. So I want to pursue this myself. So I really hope folks listening will, it's an easy website to remember, beefinitiative.com. That you'll go over there and poke around. At the very least, get yourself a box, possibly make a connection, and let's build this thing. This is really terrific. And I realize we could have talked about so much more because you have a Bitcoin angle to this, a sound money angle to this. This is a very exciting thing you're doing. How long has this Beef Initiative been around?
Well, you know what? I said, you know, I've been boots on the ground for about 3 years. And last year at this time, I was on a harvest up in North Dakota because I embedded myself into a harvest company because I needed to go deeper into, you know, harvest and what we were growing as commodities. And so right after I got back from North Dakota last August, at the end of August, I think it was August 20th, I went straight into writing. And I wrote a piece called The Harvest of Deception. And it's at my Substack. It's texasslim.substack.com. I wrote that first article and it just exploded into people like going, whoa, food intelligence, what is that? And so after I kind of identified where we came from, how we got here, I said, I need to design a solution. And that's when I really started developing some strong relationships. So we've been going hard with the Beef Initiative probably since late November, 1st of December. And here we are, end of July, 1st of August.
All right. Well, this is tremendous. And, you know, again, it's kind of up my alley lately, is to talk to somebody who is both aware of the problem and trying to come up with a solution. Because unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, we being the ones who are under attack here, we spend a lot of time defending ourselves, writing articles about the problem, but not doing anything about the problem. And so people read the articles and they say, all right, now that I have this knowledge, what do you want me to do? You're a doer. You're out there doing something. You have the Beef Initiative.
You bet. And, you know, I just got off the road. I drove 9,000 miles across the United States. I went and shook hands and I'm building out these networks of communities and people are coming in. You know, we say we're grass-fed and we're grassroots, right? And that's so true. That's the only thing you're going to get done. You're not going to be a marketing plan. That's not going to be survivorship in this times. You're going to have to be somebody that basically goes out there and innovates during times of massive prohibition, you need to create times of mass innovation. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to leverage off what my grandfather taught me, what my heritage taught me, and what I learned in big tech and technology, combine it into this modern world of saying, hey, yeah, you guys go over there. I'm not going to validate you anymore. I created a solution for myself, for my son, for my family, and for my community. And that's what I want everybody to look at this as. It is a solution. We're doing everything that we're doing. We're expanding, and we don't bite off more than we can chew. We've been very slow about this. We're not a marketing plan. This is word of mouth. You found out, you said, hey, how do I not know this guy? That's been by design, because we want to do it with a basically firm stance, a firm foundation of what we're accomplishing. This is a 10-year plan here, and so far it's going pretty good.
Well, I'm going to have on the show notes page, again, this is episode 2176, so tomwoods.com/2176. I'll have the link. So with, of course, that's beefinitiative.com. I'll also have your Twitter so people can follow you. But let's leave it, let's keep it manageable for everybody. Definitely go check this out. I know I have probably a handful of vegan listeners who will write me a note, and not a nasty note. They're very sweet people. They're not mean, at least the ones I have come across. Because, you know, when they listen to the Tom Woods Show, they're not necessarily expecting pro-beef, you know, broadcasting, because that's not what I'm primarily about. But, you know, sometimes you get, that's why the show is called, it's not called, you know, the Libertarian News Hour or anything. Right. It's called the Tom Woods Show. It's all the crazy things that I love. It's all the causes that I believe in. So one of them is this Beef Initiative, which I hope people check out, beefinitiative.com. Texas Slim, I hope we can stay in touch, and continued good luck to you.
Hey, I appreciate you, Tom. And I tell everybody, because you commented about the vegans, this is not a vegan, vegetarian, carnivore issue. This is about clean, pure food. Know where your food comes from. Shake their hands. Then you can start and you can go consume whatever you want. I'm in Texas. I eat beef, and that's what I eat. So, you know, this is not a competition here. This is about basically saving children's life with pure nutrition that comes from a pure source. And we can all can do this. We don't have to ask for permission anymore. So that's what we're about. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, folks. Tomorrow, I will, as promised, have our old friend Germinal Van back on the show. He's got his 24th book out, this one on poverty, inequality, and government policy. So we're going to have a lot of fun talking about those perennial topics. So thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.